We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome, everybody, to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here. Today is Thursday, May 6th. We don't have a May the 4th or Cinco de Mayo today. We just have a normal Thursday, May 6th. Nothing normal, though, because there's all sorts of day games, lots to talk about. My guest and co-host today is Brock Miller from Fade the Noise. You can follow him on Twitter at Brockness Monster. And I'm thrilled to have you on here, Brock. Thanks for joining me today. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just I'm so excited to be here. I really want to thank you for the opportunity. I spend a lot of time scrolling through Twitter, reading lots of interesting stuff from a lot of great analysts, just a lot of people that could deserve to be here, maybe just as much as me. So super excited to be here. Thanks.
No problem. You know, and that's one of the things with the RotoWire pod is we're trying to bring in new voices all the time. I've been around in this industry for a super long time, but so I can, it's easy for me to kind of go stay with my old reliables, but this is a great opportunity for me too. I benefit a ton just by getting to meet people. So, and you and I played together in TGFBI, I think what, 3 years ago, the first season of TGFBI. And that's how I got to know you a little bit online. So might as well get to know you a little bit. We were talking off air about what you do for a living. You're really busy right now. And busy is a good thing.
Busy keeps mostly the trouble away. Yeah. I've come to learn in my life, busy is a good thing for me, but absolutely, real job sometimes kind of takes over things, and it's one of those things, when it rains, it pours. I hate those worn out cliches as much as anybody, but they've become worn out cliches for a good reason usually, and that's one of them. Baseball picked up right at the same time my real job has just kind of taken off. It's been a crazy 6 weeks or so.
Indeed. And hey, that's good. That means bills are being paid. You can play more DFS. So you can look at it that way. Let's jump right into the news because it's copious. Starting off with John Means, huge outing yesterday with the no hitter. One drop, third strike away from it being a perfect game. Means is interesting this year because he's on an awful team, no bullpen support, little offensive support at times too. Yet he keeps rolling. He's a top 20 pitcher in baseball right now, I'd argue. And I didn't argue that enough at the beginning of the season. In fact, I didn't argue that. I was staying away because of the team context. I wish I didn't. I might have to fly another L flag my second of the year.
Yeah. Means is really, he's somebody I've got a long list of guys I missed on. Luckily I've got a big enough list of guys that I didn't miss on that most of my teams are still well within contention. But Means is somebody, I don't think I have him on NFBC leagues. I don't have him in ESPN. I didn't need to go there. But looking at the numbers so far this season, they look a lot what they did last year. And I guess it wouldn't have been crazy to maybe expect a little bit about, you know, what we've seen from him so far. But I don't think we quite saw a no hitter from him.
Exactly. No. Yeah. No, not at all. And the thing is, like, the way I see it too is, he's added velocity. That's the big thing. I think, you know, that makes, he already had a sweet changeup, but when you add in that, add that velocity, it just creates that difference between that and his changeup. And it's just taking it to another level for him. And there's another cliche for you too. Another level.
Yep. I'm trying to take a look because I can't even, you know, most of these guys I can recall right off the top of my head where they were going in NFBC. So I'm seeing like ADP of like 222, and that's just a general ADP across all the different formats that they have there. You know, 222 is going back there with Erod, somebody that was coming off of missing an entire season. David Price, same story, missed an entire season. Mm-hmm. Jordan Montgomery, James Paxton, a guy that we were hopeful there's a lot of upside there with Paxton, but also a lot of question marks there, obviously, with him. And right there in the middle of those guys, we had John Means staring right at us.
Yeah, that's right. And there you go. And you know, it's, you know, so, but you know what? That's useful to do that. I mean, it still means, okay, it's legit. You can trade for him in trade leagues. Obviously, in the NFBC, it doesn't help us. We can still use him in DFS and realize that, okay, this is real. This is legit. Even though if we missed it on some of our leagues, there are other outlets. I always find DFS is like the great FOMO equalizer. If I miss out on a guy, hey, still can use him.
Absolutely. DFS can really be a good hedge for your season-long teams. You know, guys that you've missed out on, you know, you could just take advantage of him in DFS. You know, Means is one of those guys. He's pitched like a $10,000 pitcher all season long so far and consistently, you know, in 8,000, 9,000 range. So
how often do you pay up for the $10,000 pitchers when you're playing, like if you're playing DraftKings with two starters?
So that's a really good question. And something that, especially the last week or two, I've really been pondering. I've been playing DFS since I was trying to look it up the other day, so I knew for sure. The first screenshot that I could find was like I think in 2013, and, wow. And DraftKings was pretty new then. And you know, something that happens with DFS, it seems like at least with DraftKings, is they retool their pricing algorithm every offseason. And every year it seems like it takes April to kind of figure out where the edge is. You know, 2019, it seemed like every slate, it made a lot of sense to grab an ace and then find a guy that was like 5,800 that you figured could go five innings. That was the way to go in 2019. Most of my success in 2019 was doing something similar to that. Okay. So far this season, it feels a little bit different and it makes sense. You know, take a look at the amount of pitchers that we have that are scheduled to start the, you know, our $5,800 pitcher, take a look at those guys. Most of them, you're going to be surprised if they go four innings. You know, we didn't have a lot of that in 2019. It's been a lot harder to kind of do that stars and scrubs with, you know, like on a site like DraftKings where you get to pick two pitchers. It's been a lot harder to do that. And, you know, with the way that these teams are priced, you know, there's not, I was also looking, you know, weighted runs created plus, you know, just kind of a general stat that kind of encompasses all the offensive output for a team. You know, I was taking a look and we don't have any of those offenses that have a 125 weighted runs created plus this season. You know, Boston is first right now and they're 15% above average, a 115. You know, 115 would have put them like fourth or fifth over the last couple of seasons. And so it seems to me like you don't really need that huge expensive stack to go off. We've got some cheaper teams kind of going off so far this season. And so it's starting to occur to me that it's going to make a lot more sense this season, maybe to pay up on pitching on both spots. You know, we've seen a lot of GPPs already, you know, winning rosters where, you know, you had two $10,000 pitchers on DraftKings winning those, you know, those tournaments. And that's a lot of, you know, single entry GPP. Right. That's what I play primarily. I don't play cash games anymore. I don't build, you know, I don't build 150 lineups. I don't max those. I don't even max the 20 anymore. You know, some slates it makes sense to do that, but I'm mostly a single entry GPP player. And Yeah. So this year pitching, am I paying up 10,000 at least once, if not twice?
Interesting. And you know, I'm a dilettante when it comes to DFS. I enjoy it. But I couldn't rely on it as a living. Luckily, I have my RotoWire has provided a pretty good living for me over the years. So, you know, I don't have to play on my own dime on that as much. But the thing is, it's just we all have, you know, our strengths, right? I think I'm stronger in season long. I'm stronger in just being able to do lots of multiple sports and lots of and that sort of time sucking. I mean, to do it right, you really have to put a lot of time in to put your lineups together. And I feel like between my radio and my media responsibilities and just site responsibilities, I don't have time to put together, you know, especially for tournament lineups where I think there's, you know, after you have to know like the ownership levels, you have to try to guess at that. That's not a strength of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's a good thing. That's a good way to put it too, is stick to your strengths. You know, like I think a lot of us in our real jobs, right, in our normal jobs, we know what that means. We do that at work. You know, like when I'm at work, you know, stick to your strengths. You know, we get hit up to do work, certain types of jobs that we don't normally do. And it's like, well, we could take on this work, or we could just stick to the type of work that's a little bit more in our wheelhouse, something that we really know how to make money with. And, you know, DFS is kind of a similar thing like that. I think, you know, you got to know what your strengths are. And, you know, my strength is, you know, picking out, you know, figuring out who the two top most popular stacks are going to be and cross them off my list and find a stack that's probably got just as good a chance as going off that night, but is going to come at a fraction of the ownership. You know, that's what I'm good at, is, you know, looking for those teams that are projected for, you know, 4.7 or 5.2 runs, but the people aren't going to be on. You know, look for those funny kind of numbers that we're seeing, you know, especially like right now, early in the season. You know, I know like an example here is Detroit's numbers against left-handed pitching. Absolutely putrid, right? I think like a 38 weighted runs created plus or something like that. Well, anyways, Jeff Zimmerman on Twitter the other day put out a link. He wrote an article on his site about how other teams, when, you know, 5 weeks into the season, when they have a split as bad as the Tigers do, you know, so like under a 50 weighted runs created plus or something like that. You know, how do those teams end up finishing in the season? And the worst split in at the end of the year, the worst splits in all of baseball, you know, you're talking like a 78 or an 81 weighted runs created plus, which, you know, granted, those are horrible numbers, but, you know, the way that people are putting stock into that 38 number for Detroit now. So you just know anytime there's a left-handed pitcher on a slate going up against Detroit, they're going to be massively popular. And if you can poke some holes in that pitcher, there's a good place to start your pivot right there. And that's a good way to attack single entry GPP.
You mean you can't poke holes in Martin Perez? Exactly.
You know what? The weather actually gave me an out there. I'll admit to going there. I rostered him yesterday, worked out just fine. And the weather was just enough to scare people off. He was 4% owned. 4%.
Wow.
So 4% owned against Detroit, you know, left-handed pitcher at 4% owned. I could go for that. I figured he'd be lower owned. You know, if there's no weather issues there, I'll bet you he was going to be more like 25% owned. So
sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Today it was weird because the main slate was a day slate, you know, all but like two of the games were in the day slate. And you know, I'll admit I used Eovaldi. I was kind of the square, and that did not go very well at all. You know, it's ugly. Which is it's kind of a interesting, you know, thing that, you know, you see that. And I feel like it was weird for me is early on, I thought I could handle, I was doing pretty well. I was nailing pitchers pretty well. Lately, it's not as well, in part because guys are getting priced up a little bit too. The guys that I could get in the 7,500, like a Freddy Peralta against the Cubs for 7,500. Now he's in the 9,000s and it's not as nearly as much of a value. It gets a little bit tighter, a little bit tougher.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and then there's a couple of those guys that just it hasn't really adjusted up yet for, you know, like JT Brubaker was still like 6,500 the other day or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, he's been a good pitcher. There's still a couple of them out there, but overall I agree with that. It's catching up a little bit there. Joe Musgrove is not going to be, you know, 8,512% owned anymore. You know, people are really caught up to his performance thus far. So,
yeah, I think that's right. Okay, a couple other big news items here. Albert Pujols, you've heard of him. The Angels designated him for assignment. He went to them and asked for his release after getting benched last night against Ryan Yarbrough, who had, you know, I think he was like 6-for-9 in his career against him with a couple homers, or maybe it was 9-for-12. He was looking at all the BBP charts and all that. And he's like, hey, you got to put me in. What am I doing if I'm not playing? What am I doing here if I'm not playing in this game? But this is kind of, this has been building up. He had gotten a decent run of playing time, but they've got guys that are lining up. And Gerald Walsh really should be playing first base, shouldn't be playing the outfield anyhow. There's really not a place to play Pujols when Ohtani's in the lineup. So you can see where this was going. But at the same time, it's a little still shocking to me to see it happen.
Definitely. And, you know, it's interesting too. I don't know how this works, but, you know, he has like a 10-year contract, a personal services agreement for 10 years that follows the expiration of his current contract, you know, his player contract. So it's obviously, it's not the same thing. He was, what, $23 million a year under his player contract there. But he still has a 10-year deal for the Angels that starts next year. So I don't know what a personal services contract is, you know, to right. be an assistant or whatever there. But I guess theoretically he's going to be back with the Angels start, you know, next year, I guess, right?
It's kind of like the Bonilla contract, right? It's just,
yeah,
it's,
I don't know.
It strikes me as a, you know, it's a deferred payment, and they might find a role for him possibly. They may just say, you know, just cash your, you know, they may have him coach, or they may just let him just do his thing. I don't know.
That's interesting. So maybe that is just a way to, you know, push some of that money back. I know that like kind of Philadelphia did that with Bryce Harper. You know, Bryce Harper wanted $330 million, and instead of giving him 10-year and $330 million and having $33 million count towards the luxury tax purposes there, they gave it to him for 13. So, you know, he gets his $330 million. If they release him with 3 years left, he's still going to get his money. And, you know, luxury tax purposes, they didn't have to they're further underneath the threshold there. So, yeah, with Pujols, I mean, he is such a such an interesting case there. I still remember the day he signed that contract. I still remember a lot of the conversations that came from signing that contract. You know, what's kind of funny is I don't think I'd rostered him in DFS in like 3 years. And I actually got a couple times over the last couple weeks. I got like a $2,800 home run out of him a couple
nice.
Weeks ago. He was hitting okay there. And, you know, the Angels, though, it is interesting. I mean, he's just been bad, right? I mean, look at his weighted runs created last year, the year before. Definitely just one of the worst hitters in baseball, right? There's not a lot of debate there. He's been bad, and, you know, that offense is good, even with his, you know, bad number right there in the middle of him there. So, but I think you nailed that. You know, you got to get Walsh in there. You got to start figuring out some of these long-term pieces here. You know, they've really got to put a competitive team out there with Mike Trout, and they've got to start figuring out things soon.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, they realize the concept of sunk cost. I mean, the fact is they're going to pay him regardless. Why pay in your lineup too? I mean, they've been doing this for years. And in fact, they've been doing it in like key spots in the lineup too, not just him playing, but often in batting. But behind Trout or, you know, a couple spots down. I mean, it took a long time for the kind of get to that realization, which makes you wonder, like, how much of this is driven by the owner, for instance, rather than at the managerial level. And finally, they had enough.
Yeah, the owner's the one that forced that contract. You know, that wasn't DePoto's idea. That was Artie Moreno's idea to sign that contract. So, you know, I know Pujols is – he said a lot about, you know, chasing the home run records, trying to move up the home run records and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He didn't even say that he was necessarily going to be done playing after this year. So if he's released now, like, you know, he's trying to find a job right now.
Sure, of course. And that's why he was pushing on that. I've already seen people speculate about the White Sox because they've had a couple injuries, but position wise, it doesn't really help them that much because they really need help in the outfield. That's where they need the help. They have plenty of first base DH types.
And I can't think of a team out there that really needs a DH. You know, the American League teams, you know, last year the National League teams had to scramble a little bit for it.
Right.
But like the American League teams, all those teams are pretty well built with the idea that we don't have a DH. you know, DH is a spot where we get a guy off his legs for a day, but we still have his bat in the lineup. I mean, you know, most of the teams are doing that now. So I honestly don't see where Pujols fits on any of the teams.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I have to agree with that as well. Injury notes. Of course, there are many. There are plenty. Today, Byron Buxton left with a hip strain. We all know Byron Buxton gets hurt. That's what he does. He's having an amazing year, but he's already missed time on a couple of different issues. And hopefully this one in particular is a bad. I won't ask you about the injury so much as, you know, Buxton, how do you put a value on him for the rest of the year, knowing that this is part of his package?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, I know how the lenses that I am looking through when I am making these kinds of decisions preseason, you know, during draft season. And normally I'm looking at this like, okay, you get Buxton, an elite player when he's in there. And when he's not in there, you know, what's the replacement, you know, and you kind of try to put those numbers together and what kind of player comes out on the end there. What's interesting though, is, I mean, outfield's been tough. There's and just injuries in general. I mean, you know, Buxton's hurt, but so is everybody else. You know, your right. replacement for a guy, you know, if you've got Buxton, if he goes on the injured list, you know, you're not replacing him with a decent hitter. If you had asked me this question 6 weeks ago, you know, mid-March, my answer is probably different. You know, then it's like, oh, okay, you grab somebody off the waiver wire or if it's a DC or something like that, you know, you're going to have somebody decent. I mean, I've got DCs where if, you know, and I mean, I drafted seven backup outfielders. I've got DCs where if I get an outfielder hurt now, I've got nobody to replace him with. I'm already taking zero. So, I mean, there's just so little depth out there. Every year we get a little bit more heavy or team offenses are a little bit more dependent on platoons. So there's just not a lot of replacements out there.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. And I'm just stunned at how many outfielders in particular. Scott Jensen and I always talk about this. Hard to find good outfielders. I got, you know, I'm thrilled when Harrison Bader is out there, and you know, he's Harrison Bader. He's playing on a pretty regular basis, though. He can get you some power, some speed. Okay, sign me up. I'll try to get him. I mean, I think I got stuck with Brandon Nimmo active this week because I had nobody to replace him. He was day to day, and it's like, okay, I had two other outfielders on my bench, and this is one of my main event teams. And there's just Tim Schuler and I, who run a team together, and it's like, okay, we should have cut one more guy, but you can only have so many outfielders.
You know, on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, I think you were part of this conversation too. We were all having a good laugh about it, where it was one of those situations where you got so many guys that are hurt. You know, you're trying to put somebody in the lineup, just hoping, hey, maybe they come back from the injury list, you know, a couple of days earlier. You know, maybe I can get, you know, Wednesday and Thursday at bats out of them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, look at, and then you like, you had this tough decision this week. What do you do with Christian Yelich? Okay. He's in the lineup Monday. Let's put him in. Boom. We're back, baby. Let's go. One game later, he's back on the IL. Come on. I mean, I feel bad for him. I mean, of course, obviously, but it's tough. And then you can't even bench your slumping guys when this happens. And, you know, sometimes you've got some guys that are marginal, questionable guys, but playing time's king. I mean, you just need some sort of counting stats.
Yeah. I think I have Tommy Pham in like 4 out of my 11 leagues on NFBC, and he's active in every single one of them. That whatever 130 batting average or whatever it is, and you know, batting average, that's kind of the one spot that seems like it's really hurting. You know, people are talking about a lot on Twitter there, a lot of right. tweets about batting average just being down across the league or whatever. And I took kind of a look at it. I compared. I made like tiers, you know, like 300 hitters, 200 hitters below the Mendoza line, and the amount of hitters that are below 200. I think, you know, most other years you're talking between 11 and 13% of qualified hitters under 200 at this point in the season, you know, 5 weeks into the season. And this week that number this year, number's up around like 18%, you know, so 70% more hitters hitting under 200. And it's been tough to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, median batting average in the NFBC main event is 245. I mean, a 260 hitter helps you. It's not just okay to have a 260 hitter. You're like psyched to get a 260 hitter. It's wild. And then so when you get a slumper, I mean, it's, you know, and then with combined with the injuries and the batting average problems, sometimes you just got to roll with it. Like we had a question here from Lancer, who asked a couple questions about a couple outfielders. Quick opinions on Lourdes Gurriel and Victor Robles. And, you know, Robles, let's start with him. He's hitting 224 right now. This is heading into today's game, which just ended. They lost 3-2. I don't know what he did today, but he's got no homers. He's got one stolen base. He's been caught three times. He's not even running well when he runs. He is walking more. Yay. But, you know, you got to actually do something at some point in time. He's got three extra base hits, and none of those are homers. You know, he's lost that leadoff spot more often than not. I mean, what do you do with the Victor Robles?
Well, yeah. So he's definitely hitting eighth a lot this year. He's hitting eighth, so he's hitting in front of the pitcher. Not a great spot there. Just kind of pulling up a couple of the numbers, taking a look underneath the hood. The plate discipline there. He's actually swinging the bat a lot less. His swing rate is down to 42%. So, you know, that's quite, you know, usually he's up there about 50%. So he's swinging less, which means he's, you know, chasing a little bit less there, but the quality of contact just must be absolutely horrible if he's chasing less and he's still putting up like absolutely no numbers. Cause you know, it's not like this guy was a complete bum. What was that? 17 home runs in 2019. That was his kind of first shot at having the job there. 600 plate appearances, hit 17 home runs with all those steals. So, you know, this is a guy that we've seen, you know, the walk rate's 12%. It looks, I mean, if you're really looking for some silver lining on this guy, he's definitely taken a different approach at the plate there. 12% walk rate this year. Years past, he's a 5% walk rate type of guy. So, you know, for context, that means he just doesn't walk. You know, 5% is pretty low there. So he's definitely making a noticeable adjustment at the plate. It's not working out so far. I kind of, you know, when a guy who's good enough at baseball to the point that he's made it to the major leagues is making big changes like that, like those changes haven't paid off so far. I've got to think he finds a happy medium there between this new approach and the old approach. And I think, you know, we're not going to see as much power as we saw from him before. Maybe he's not that 20 homer, 30 stolen base guy there. But I think he's going to be able to get back to some kind of, you know, respectable level there.
I hate the StatCast stuff though. I mean, average exit velocity, hard hit percentage, they're all down, and they were down even in 2019. That's the thing. Scott Jenstad is always, talking about that. And you know, you start hitting the eighth a lot. That means fewer running chances, especially with the lack of DH. It's a real problem. I don't know what I only have him in one league, and it's an OBP league, so he isn't killing me as much. But yeah, I expected him to run. When I get everybody healthy again in that league, I'm going to have to make a hard choice on him pretty soon. And it's a keeper league too. It's a long-term dynasty league. It's XFL, so I've got him at a great deal. You know, and it's slow acceleration too. And you know, it's just but you got to produce at some point. I mean, we only have 15 keepers. You know, you have to make that decision. And you know, I made some decisions, I let some other potentially useful guys go because I wanted to keep the, you know, the long-term upside. But at some point you have to start delivering, and it's a tough call. The Blue Jays, Lourdes Gurriel, I mean, they bought some time with him because George Springer's going back in the IL. And judging by the comments I saw from the Toronto beat writers today, they're thinking it's going to be more than your 10 days with this back to the IL trip because of his quad injury. But Lourdes Gurriel's batting eighth in the lineup again too, a lot. He's not hitting for average. That's the one thing he was supposed to be able to do. He's hitting 221 going in today, two homers, nine RBI, eight runs, and one stolen base. That for a top 10 round player, that's just not getting it done.
Yeah, I'll take a look at his numbers real quick too. And, you know, the batting average balls in play is down a little bit and stuff like that, but absolutely no power from him. You know, looking at the rankings, looking at the numbers there, I mean, it's supposed to be a 50 hit tool, supposed to be a 55 raw power. We're supposed to see a lot more out of this guy than we've seen from him so far this season. But, you know, as a guy that already didn't walk, and he's not walking at all this year, that he didn't really have any room for that to get any worse there. So he's got a 58 weighted runs created plus so far this year, and he's definitely earned it. But, you know, that said, man, you know, It's kind of strange when a guy, let's see, last year 135 weighted runs created plus, the year before 124. It's kind of hard to put up numbers that solid for a couple years and then just disappear. Not going to say that it doesn't happen because we've seen it, but it's pretty unlikely. So there's got to be some kind of a rebound in this guy, but it's one of those guys, you know, like you said, you're hoping for some batting average from him, but he's not going to hit that many home runs. He's got a little bit of power. He's not going to steal. It's a tough spot because this is a guy that you don't want to trust, but there's not a lot of depth on the waiver wire.
Yeah, I'd trade for him, I think, in trade leagues. I think you could probably get him at a reasonable price. You know, you just point out, well, I'm short an outfielder. You know, you can't, you know, you kind of like, okay, you list him among the choices that you're seeking out. And of course, the guy who's got him rostered will probably rather trade him than someone that's doing better right now. And hopefully, you know, kind of approach it like that. And otherwise, if he doesn't want to trade Lourdes Gurriel and he thinks highly of him, just like you might, maybe you get another outfielder that's doing better. But either way, you're trying to find somebody there.
Well, I think it's probably whoever has him is deciding between trading him and cutting him, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Chance for that too. So.
Yeah, that's also true. Okay, a couple other injury notes here. Anthony Rendon, you know, just went back on the IL, this time after falling a ball off his kneecap. This is the second trip already this season. He had a little bit of a slow start last year because of health issues. I mean, it's part of his bag as well. You know, same as like we were talking about Buxton earlier, it's kind of similar to that here too.
Yeah, Rendon is, you know, gosh, I mean, extremely talented player, you know, both sides of the ball, obviously, you know, somebody that played an integral role in that World Series that the Nationals won in 2019. But man, after he locked into that contract, it's been one thing after another for him. I mean, you know, even in the shortened season last year, I know that, you know, he was somebody that I valued in drafts just because he felt like maybe like a third round guy that was more being drafted, you know, further down, fourth and fifth round there. You know, I didn't really like third base much after, you know, if it wasn't Machado or if it wasn't him, you know, or Devers, you know, those kind of three top choices there, anything below, or Jose as well. You know, after that, I didn't really like a whole lot of the options there, but yeah, it's been a tough go of it. And, you know, for me, a lot of the notes that I'm taking with this is, you know, you take Rendon out of that lineup and, you know, of course, Mike Trout's hitting 400 and we don't even really expect that to come back down at all. Like maybe he's just going to hit 400. He's that good. And Otani's great, of course. And, you know, Walsh has been solid against righties. I think Walsh overperformed a little bit last year. I'm a fan of Walsh in DFS in certain scenarios there, but that lineup's getting a little, you know, watered down there. So we'll see. Maybe they can call up, you know, Joe Adell, you know, somebody who was obviously a horrible debut there, get some reinforcements for that lineup because, you know, the Angels performed pretty well this year. But if you take, if, you know, if Rendon's going to be out for a while, I don't want to see where that ends up.
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is, it's like, I always argue the Angels seem to be this, like the sum is less than, you know, the whole is less than the sum of their parts. They have Trout, they have Otani, they have Rendon when he's healthy, but they don't put it all together. They always seem to be like, oh yeah, this should be a really good team. You look at Trout, you start with Trout and you look at some of the other issues, some of the other top players say, oh yeah, this should be a pretty good team. And then you look at them with their three games under 500, four games under 500. What's going on again here? And I know a lot of that could be arguably his pitching, but it's, I wonder what's going on with them. And it's tough when you lose one of your key players.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't have a lot of room. They don't have depth. You know, they're kind of the anti-Dodgers, right? You know, the Dodgers usually, you know, somebody gets hurt and they're going to replace him. You know, like last year, you know, if Turner was hurt, they replaced him with Edwin Rios, you know, who's a guy that looks like somebody with regular playing time could post like a 300 ISO or something like that. You know, like that's the guy that you replaced, you know, one of your stars with. The Angels are definitely different than that. And well, and even we're kind of seeing that the Dodgers are a little bit different than that this season. Their depth does not look the way that it did last year, but
our guy Rios in particular has really struggled. And that's unfortunate. I had him in a lot of DCs early on.
Yeah. He, especially early on, he was a great target there when we didn't know that Turner was coming back or not there. I think I've got him in a couple, and I, what is he like 0 for the last 30?
Like something like that.
Horrible. And And if it isn't bad enough that the guy's 0 for 30, you know, I watch pretty much every single Dodger game. So I've gotten to watch every single one of those 0 for 30. And they're just, they're horrible. You know, it feels like Juan Uribe from like, you know, whatever, 7 years ago.
Well, there's a throwback. Yeah.
When Uribe was going so bad, Uribe was hilarious because he had the exact same swing and he would just go up there. He would, like, I swear, he would just have it in his head, like, okay, fourth pitch, we're swinging. You know, he'd go up there and take a couple pitches, make it look like he's trying to read the pitcher or whatever. And on the fourth pitch, he'd take this huge swing right down the middle. And if the pitch wasn't right down the middle, he'd swing and miss. It'd be 2 feet, 3 feet outside. It didn't really matter. He had the same swing every time. And Edwin Rios, one of the most powerful, quick, you know, it's kind of it starts out a short swing, but he really ends.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Long, but it's a great swing, but it's the same swing no matter what. It doesn't matter 0-2. It doesn't matter if the pitch is down low, the pitch is up high. He just seems like he doesn't read the pitch at all. He's got a good swing, but doesn't read it.
Well, hopefully, you know, Rios's career can model Uribe's, how he came back after that initial horrible stretch for the Dodgers. He was actually pretty good when they started, you know, making the playoffs again. He was actually a key part of that, which, you know, maybe that could be the hope there. That's the goals in life, if you will, but we'll see. Before we go on, quick note from our sponsors. We always do this. They have a couple of pre-recorded ads we're going to put in right now.
Like any good team, hiring the right employees for your front office is just as important as recruiting the best players for the game. That's why you need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications, and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions. And now they want to help you even more. With a Credit Karma Money Spend account, you can be rewarded for good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. Just pay with your debit card, and if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your Instant Karma cash will be added back to your spend account. Open your FDIC-insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and free withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll automatically be entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant Karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase necessary. Exclusions and terms apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank Incorporated. Member FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits apply.
If, for those of you that were on the audio podcast, thanks for listening to our ads. It does help us quite a bit. But let's keep going. I'm Jeff Erickson. I'm here with Brock Miller from Fade the Noise. We've been talking a lot of injury notes. just I want to talk generally, just dealing with injuries this year, how hard it's been, you know, both season long and from a DFS standpoint. You know, I don't know. I've seen some pushback from like Will Carroll suggesting that the injury numbers aren't higher than they are, but I got to tell you, I feel like they're higher than ever.
If I'm going on based on a feeling, I'm right with you. It feels like there's so much news. It's so much to keep up with. And, you know, based on that alone, I could tell you there's more injuries, but you know, I saw some numbers from Derek Rhodes on Twitter. I don't know if you have him on Twitter.
I do.
He's kind of the injury guy there and does a great job. And, you know, and he ran through the numbers and they're definitely up. There's definitely more injuries. And then I think on top of it too, you know, guys are getting nicked up and it seems this is another one that one of these things that I can't prove and I have no numbers for, but it seems like, you know, teams are a little bit more likely to rest guys. I think they're kind of seeing, you know, how these guys are or they're taking more into context how guys are performing when they are nicked up. And you know what? They're getting guys time off a little bit more. You know, they're using the bench guys a little bit more than they have in years past. You know, if your star player's nicked up, you know, you sit him down. You know, in years past, you know, there's some of those guys, you know, your top players are playing, you know, 155 games a year. I think it'll be interesting to see how numbers come out at the end of the year, but I don't think you have hardly anybody playing 160 or 150 games this year.
I agree. And, you know, funny thing is I thought it would show up a lot on the pitching side. I didn't realize it would affect the hitting side nearly as much as it has. I think that's the thing that's caught me off guard.
Yeah. Yeah. Between the, you know, abnormally low batting averages early in the season, you know, and then the injuries on top of it. I mean, it's been quite a scramble.
It has. I was reading a tweet too that the start of the minor league season is tracking similarly too. That it's sloppy play at least. Strikeout rate in the California League games early on is super high. And the errors are also high in the first few games too. I mean, it's a few games. We're talking 2-3 games here. So, you know, say what you will about the sample, but at the same time, you know, it just shows. I mean, these guys have been off, and then the minor league guys, they've been off for 2 years. We saw Hunter Green. He had his first start yesterday in over 1,000 days, which is just wild to me. But, you know, for anybody that didn't get to the, you know, alternate training camp site or even worse, you know, they just, you know, didn't get anything at all. I mean, it's just got to be such a ramp up here. I think we're going to see a lot of minor league injuries too.
Yeah. And that kind of makes sense. You know, you play golf, right?
Yes. Poorly, but avidly.
Okay. So imagine you only went to the driving range for a year and a half. You just never got out on the course. So you're not like not playing golf at all. You're not like not touching the golf clubs, but you haven't been out on the course. You haven't, you know, really put it to use. You've just been at the driving range for a year and a half. And then you go back out there to, you know, to play around. It's not going to be the same, you know.
Nope.
Practicing for a year and a half isn't the same as, you know, mixing in the final version there. You know, you're not playing any games. You're not out on the actual course, you know, putting it to use. So I think that makes sense for me. I play some golf as well. And, you know, that makes sense for me. And seeing that from the minor league guys just kind of fits right along with that.
You're out in Riverside, right? So
the side of the river. Yes.
Yeah, so it'd be like going to Oak Quarry after not playing any course for about a year and a half, too. Playing a hard course and playing it from the tips. A beautiful course, mind you, but, you know, it just doing that without just having, you know, just going to the driving range where you have and one where you can't hit driver too, like a short driving range or something like that, you know, and you're only hitting off of mats. That's it. That's almost what it's like there, the controlled environment. So yeah, I agree. It'd be really difficult.
That's the analogy, hitting off the mat versus hitting off the grass. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Indeed. Okay. Let's talk a little bit more about what you're doing. DFS wise, you mentioned that you like doing, you know, single entry contests the most. Why did you stop playing cash games?
So that was something that kind of happened over the course of a few years. You know, cash games, it's something that I quit playing in baseball, but not other sports. And now I mostly just kind of take the off season off. Okay. You know, I do so much for baseball between season long, between DFS, between writing. You know, last year I was doing a solo podcast, which was just absolutely taxing. You know, I got to the end and, you know, everybody's tweeting about NFL DFS all day. And I was like, I don't care. I'm not playing. I don't want to watch. I don't just nothing. So I just needed the time off. But after I quit playing cash games in baseball, I was still playing cash games in the NBA. And I think that makes a lot of sense. The NBA is such a in NFL too. Those are sports where DFS wise for playing cash games, you're really just trying to predict volume, you know, and with that volume, a certain floor of fantasy points are going to come along with it. And that's easy to do. That's something that if you're good at it, you know, you can string together, you know, seven straight good days, you know, in NBA cash games, you know, in baseball, the variance is just way too high in baseball. In 2013, 2014, you know, I would get on and read RotoGrinders articles and read about, you know, in Fantasy Insiders articles and read about playing. And, you know, that was the big thing, play cash games. You know, you can put 10% of your bankroll into GPP, but you want to focus on playing cash games and kind of build up that bankroll. And, you know, back then the rake on the DFS sites was like 8% or whatever. You know, the rake now is like 15, 16% in cash games, I think. Yeah. You know, it's doubled, and you might not think that affects you, but it really does in the long run. There's been a few articles posted by some of my friends on Twitter over the last, you know, actually, especially over the last 6 weeks, you know, this year, people are really, you know, the word's getting out on game selection and DFS. And, you know, to win in cash games, I mean, you got to win 70% of the time. And if you're winning 70% of the time, that's an 8% return on investment. To give a little bit of context there, you can like make eight times as much money by playing single entry DFS every day, losing 29 days, and then, you know, you build a big one on the 30th day. You know, you're losing most of the time, and you got to have the stomach to be able to go out there and
the bankroll, for that matter.
Get smashed 30 or 40. Well, yeah, and you got to manage your bankroll right too. You know, don't go out there and put 25% out there on any, you know, given day. But yeah, you've got to have you got to be able to commit to the process and lose for an extended period of time. But you know, if you get that big one, you know, on that 30th day, that makes up for it tenfold. You're going to make way more money than you would have even if you were out there, you know, cashing in cash games 70% of the time.
That's in a really arresting number. 70% of the time is what you need to win in cash games. That blows me away. Because that used to be like the safe harbor. Like, okay, play a lot of head to heads and you can play lower rate games like that and you can get by. But you know, this that's really eye opening.
Yeah. Cash game. Everybody, you know, I try not to jump on Twitter and poo poo the whole thing, in front of everybody. And you know, there really are plenty of people out there that just enjoy the idea of cash games and enjoy the process that goes into cash games and stuff. But anybody that hits me up in private, like, you know, hey, help me out with some DFS. Hey, help me out with DraftKings or whatever. First thing I tell them is, okay, you know, if you want to just focus on one lineup, you know, that's what I do. If you don't have the time to build 20, build 150 lineups or whatever, if you're only building one lineup, then, you know, put that lineup in smarter contests, you know? So, you know, single entry is one thing, but I'm not talking like the $5 single entry, because even that one, you know, there's 4,000 entries in there. You know, winning mm-hmm. that one, you know, you're going to have to come up with pretty close to an optimal lineup to win that one. So my advice is, you know, stick with single entry GPP, you know, be able to really get paid when you come up with a big one on that day. But for most of us, you know, trying to win a GPP with, you know, 200, 300, 400 people in that contest is probably a good target. You know, stick to those ones. And, you know, if you want to play a little bit less money, you know, if you're a little bit more of a casual player, say you're only, you know, playing $15, you know, get in there. FanDuel and DraftKings both have these contests where, you know, they limit it to 100 entries or whatever. You know, come up with a pseudo cash game lineup. You know, maybe think of a good pivot in there here or there. You know, if you really sense some bad chalk on one of the pitchers or whatever, then that's a good place to kind of pivot there. But, you know, stick to a lineup like that and stick to those contests where, you know, you're only trying to beat 100 people. I mean, you're going to have a lot more success doing that. That's something where, you know, you can go out there and win one of those every couple of weeks, you know, and you're you're going to have a lot more fun than if you're, you know, trying to build a lineup and try to build, beat, you know, 4,000 people in the $5, you know, single entry GPP. You're going to have a lot more fun, in those smaller contests there. You know, and on, I'm not sure on FanDuel, but on DraftKings, the rake is a lot less on those as well.
Yeah, that's smart. You know, and again, that's the thing I think, you know, people lose sight of what, you know, looking what the rake is. I sometimes overlook it sometimes too. You know, you get comfort, you get in a groove, you get comfortable, and you just start playing these contests you always play. They kind of sneak in and take away from you on that too. So I think that's really good advice.
Well, and it's interesting too. I mean, you know, talking about the rake, you know, like in cash games, you need to win 70% of the time. You know, change that to you need to win 60% of the time. You know, that's a big difference right there. You know, think of it in some other terms. You know, maybe, you know, Gerrit Cole, like today, what was Gerrit Cole, 10,200?
Something like that.
Like that on DraftKings? Like just over 10,000. Well, what if he was only 9,000 today? Like, I mean, you would have had to have used them, right? You know, 10,000 against a team that doesn't strike out so much. You know, there's a little bit of a debate there, but, you know, right. Reduce his price by 10%, like 9,000. Oh, he's got, you know, smash, you know, you're going with that, you know, so if you're going to be able to improve your odds by, you know, 5%, you know, improve those numbers by 7%, it might not seem like a lot, but you got to take advantage of those kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was 10-5, by the way. I just looked it up, but at least on DK, I don't know what he was on FanDuel. You know, that's just the thing, and that's a great point too. It's knowing that and knowing the math behind it is probably what separates a lot of the winning players from those that are just dabbling.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And you know, single entry GPP, especially if you're talking about a contest with 100 people or whatever. You know, you're going to be able to pull up the numbers and look at the Vegas odds, look at the implied, you know, totals there. And, you know, you're probably going to have, three teams that day that are projected for, you know, 5.5 runs or 5.2 runs or whatever, you know, where it's the Yankees are at home against the lefty or something like that. There's probably going to be three teams and, you know, a lot of the ownership rate is going to be based on, what the different websites algorithms are pumping out. And a lot of the projections that come out lean on those Vegas numbers quite a bit. So that'll kind of give you a good guide as to which teams are going to be the highest owned teams. And, you know, on those days where, you know, the Yankees are projected for like 5.7 runs or whatever, you know, if it's a little bit of a shorter slate or something like that, you know, you can expect those guys to be probably, you know, 40% owned, right? You know, so just look at things through those lenses. You know, that's the one pivot that you might have to make that day that'll make the difference. You know, you take a look at that where, you know, okay, I do like the Yankees and I do think they're going to score some runs. You know, they're in a good matchup there, but you know, maybe it's summer weather in LA and the Dodgers are at home against a righty. That's a team that can, you know, really get to a right-handed pitcher as well. And, you know, maybe you're looking at things and the Dodgers are only projected at 5.2 runs. Well, all the algorithms are going to push people towards the Yankees. Those teams, what's really the difference in projections between those two teams on that slate? It's probably not a whole lot different, but the ownership rates are not going to reflect that. So that's kind of the single entry GPP strategy that I employ. You know, just take a look and cross the two most popular ones, or maybe on a slate, cross off the three most popular teams, or, you know, there are those slates where you've got to be able to admit that, hey, the Yankees are going to be popular, and that's just not chalk that I'm going to be able to avoid today.
Yeah, for sure. That probably is a little bit more art than it is science sometimes, I got to imagine. It's just, you just have to have that feeling, I guess. And that comes with experience and comes with playing a lot. Something I'm still working on the DFS side of things. I want to talk a little specifics on Dodgers, but first, a quick note from our friends at Moon Baseball Road Trips, the complete guide to all the ballparks with beer, bites, and sights nearby. Arriving just in time for the 2021 season, this brand new Moon Travel Guides book is the ultimate guide to baseball. This book is as much a travel guide as it is a dive into the classic American road trip, vibrant fan communities, baseball history, and of course, the 30 incredible MLB cities. 7 road trip routes with detailed itineraries. It's organized by region, so you can drive a loop through the Midwest, cruise along the West Coast, or hit the ballparks from Boston to D.C. insider advice for visiting each ballpark. So not just how to catch a game, but tips on snagging tickets, securing the best seats, and insider scoop on the best bars and restaurants nearby. This insider scoop comes from author and lifelong baseball fan, Timothy Malcolm. He served as a senior writer and editor at Phillies Nation, written stories for the Hardball Times, and has been featured on Mets Blog and Yahoo's Big League Stew, that is. He's also hosted two baseball podcasts himself, including the Phillies Nation broadcast. To write this book, Tim hit the road and explored everything from Boston to Seattle to Phoenix and the Bay, bringing the experience of the game to the readers across the world. For the ultimate baseball experience this summer, order your copy of Moon Baseball Road Trips, available at online retailers and your local bookstore or at www.moon.com. I'm Jeff Erickson here with Brock Miller from Fade the Noise. Brock, have you done any good baseball road trips?
Yeah, so I actually try to do a few road trips every year. I spend actually most of my weekends doing some kind of a road trip, whether it's baseball related or not. Mm-hmm. But yeah, road trips for baseball stadiums are one of my favorite things. And I kind of have this goal. I thought it was a cool goal at the time, but it turns out that everybody more or less has the same goal, and that is to see a baseball game at every stadium, all the major stadiums. And I don't know where you are on your list. I am about halfway through. I'm at 15. I'm actually at like 16 stadiums, but one of them was the old Texas stadium. So at some point or another, I'm going to have, if I do complete my list, it's going to be with 31 stadiums. Just because I'm going to have to double up over there in Arlington. But where are you at on your list?
Yeah, so I've got a similar problem, except it's a bigger problem. I've got like 20-plus stadiums, but at least five or six are no longer, including my favorite team, the Reds. I have not been to Great American Ballpark. I'm a horrible fan, obviously. But I've done like the old St. Louis Stadium, but not the new one. I've done the old Baltimore Stadium, but not the current one. You know, I'm old is kind of what I'm saying. But, you know, I've done most of the West Coast. The only one I haven't done on the West Coast is Oakland. So I will try to do that sometime. I've done both San Francisco's. I've done both San Diego's, Dodger Stadium, Angel Stadium, obviously. I've done Seattle, which was pretty awesome. But have not done Oakland. I was in Denver we did a family road trip this last summer, which was awesome. Denver is part of it, but of course, we just walked around the outside of Coors Field. It doesn't really count, which is unfortunate. But I really want to do a series of road trips. Might have to wait till the kids are out, done with school, but at some point we'll do that. But yeah, I love baseball stadiums. Love doing all sorts of them. I've been to 43 states also, so trying to get all 50 states, all 30 stadiums.
Yeah, that's awesome, and that's funny you say that. I'm the exact same. I've been to all the West Coast ones. Except for Oakland.
Not exactly. You know, the thing is, if I went with Genstad to an A's game, it'd be a blast. You know,
it'd totally be awesome. No offense to Scott, but.
Yeah. But it's hard to want to go to that stadium, especially if they're seeking a new one out anyhow. Although that seems like that's never going to happen. It's like the white whale trying to find a place to build a stadium. No one wants them.
Yeah. And that stadium, too, I think it's probably the general consensus amongst all baseball fans, well, at least, you know, ones that know and care. If you had to just kind of make a list, if you only got to go to like a couple different stadiums, that's probably the one that's least likely to make it on your list, I think.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. I want to talk about your Dodgers, though. You are a Dodgers fan. This was a tough week. I was actually out with a few friends last night and a group of people, and all Dodger fans, they're all going kind of, you know, they're rooting on like it was a playoff game. It was, I think there's this edge to Dodger fans right now. Like, gotta just get off this night. You know, it's coming, you know, like you win one, they're going to be fine. It's like, we'll be back on track, but getting that one has been just really a hassle lately.
Oh, it has been. You know, I don't have the numbers, I swear, though. I think it's like three out of the last 16 or something like that. Only three wins in the last, you know, whatever, 2.5 weeks. It's been tough. It's been like a myriad of problems. It's been defense. It's been the bullpen a lot. You know, the starting pitching has been fine. You got like, you know, four aces there. Dustin May going down really bums me out.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught wind of this kind of preseason. You know, everybody was trying to, you know, it just for whatever reason on Twitter, everybody felt like they needed to plant their flag on either the Tony Gonsolin Hill or on the Dustin May Hill. And basically everybody was over there on the Dustin May side. And I was all alone over there. Maybe it was just me. I take that back. Maybe it was just me that felt like I had to plant my flag there, but you know, I was really confident in Tony Gonsolin over Dustin May.
And I took Gonsolin over May in the main. I'm there with you. I'm in Kathmandu with you.
Really like the upside with Dustin May. Obviously, anybody can go out there and, you know, throw 100 miles an hour in the sixth inning is somebody that, you know, you want to watch. And he was so great with, you know, the gifts, the pitching ninja gifts last year and stuff. And or GIFs, excuse me, I don't know which way you pronounce that, but
I don't even care.
So Dustin, I mean, he was really taking a step forward. He was really proving me wrong. And I couldn't have been more happy to be wrong, you know, really just, you know, watching him be out there and thrive. He was missing bats. I don't know. You know, they really just changed around the way that they were attacking hitters with his arsenal and just not shocked that a team like the Dodgers was able to figure that out for him. And then he gets hurt.
Gonsolin might come back. They're saying in like 3 to 4 weeks, and they're hoping to get him up to 4 to 5 innings. We might have to go find a little molehill, a Josiah Gray molehill or Mitchell White. I don't know. I remember seeing Mitchell White pitch in Rancho Cucamonga like 3 years ago, but you know, he's not bad either. I mean, but it's just kind of funny that a team with so much depth is just running thin right now. And I think they'll get some of these reinforcements back, but you know, when their depth guys aren't performing, we talked about Rios earlier, it really stings. And I think they've had like 12 pitchers go on the IL. Alexander went on today. Although they did get Joe Kelly back today. So, you know, it's a trade-off, I suppose, but it's just, they've been really pushing that depth angle this year.
Yeah. You know, they've had to dip a little bit deeper in the well than I think that they would have liked to, obviously. And, you know, guys like Luke Rayleigh, Sheldon Noisy had a good couple days, but I don't know. He's somebody that I think long-term, you know, if you could, you know, ship him off to a team that could just kind of let him play every day and let him develop a little bit more, I think he could be a guy. I don't know that the Dodgers are really going to be able to afford him that opportunity, but so he hasn't been much. You know, Rayleigh is another guy that, you know, I think he's a similar situation there. They've already called up DJ Peters, who is just definitely feels like that guy that's going to be able to hit 30 home runs in the minors, but it's not going to translate to the major league level. I think they're really seeing there that, you know, letting Jock go, especially I was surprised. I don't know about you. I was surprised. What was it? 1 year and $6 million with Chicago.
Yeah.
If the price tag was that low, why didn't the Dodgers just bring him back? Yeah. Of course, you know, if he was going to go out there and get a big deal, then I can see like, okay, you're the Dodgers, you're going to find somebody or whatever. But for 1 year and $6 million, you know, come on. I think that they're kind of hurting there. I feel like they, you know, injuries aside, they had capably replaced Kike Hernandez. You know, Zach McKinstry was playing pretty well there, and he's a guy, he hasn't put up any flashy numbers in the minor leagues, but I think you can look at some of the underlying numbers, you know, that walk rate and some other things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think you could see that McKinstry is a guy who is going to be a solid major league player. You know, he's probably not going to be an everyday player at any one position or whatever. But I think he's going to kind of go the way of Kike Hernandez, you know, be a useful utility guy that they can use for a couple years. And then eventually, you know, maybe he can move on to another team that wants to play him every day or whatever. But definitely a capable replacement for Kike Hernandez, but they did not find the replacement for Jock.
Yeah, and unfortunately, when the replacements for the replacements get hurt, you know, it's kind of a problem too. When McKinstry goes down, that's tough. Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned Jock, because Scott Jenstad, friend, you know, co-host and friend of ours, asked, if some random person were to have to bet on Jock Peterson's BA batting average at the end of the season, will you be willing to add 50 points for each bat flip for walking off homers at a really routine flyouts? Referring to last night's game. I think the wind had a lot to do with it, but yeah, it's so funny. He thought he had a monster shot, and it didn't even reach the warning track there. And he had this look of like disbelief on his face. The whole bar kind of erupted too last night when he hit it. It looked like he hit it. It was typical to like being at a stadium and reacting to a routine fly ball, but you know, the way everybody reacted, including him, but it was kind of funny.
when he hit it, I, you know, I happened to be at the taco place in downtown over there. And when he hit the ball, I stood up out of my seat. I thought I was grabbing my phone. I thought I was grabbing my wallet. I thought I was walking out. I thought it was gone. And I was like, I don't want to watch any more of this. I can't take any more of this. I started to get up and it was caught. I mean, it fooled him. It fooled me too. I thought he got it. But so a little bit of perspective or a little bit of background there. Scott and I have a bet. We made a side bet in the preseason about Jock Peterson's batting average. Yeah, this was kind of a behind the scenes bet there. You know, we were having a little bit of a discussion there, and you know, I was excited about the idea of Jock being able to play every day and where he was being drafted. At the time, he was being drafted like 350 overall. It's pretty early in the draft season, but he was, you know, way down there. You know, for a guy that could go out there and hit 38 home runs again like he did 2 years ago, you know, especially if he's going to be able to play every day. But I also thought the other side of that coin was, hey, you know, if he's going to be playing against lefties, that's going to hurt his batting average even more. He only hit .190 last year. You know, even with a little bit of luck this year, I thought, I can't remember our bet. I'll have to go back through the DMs to verify. I can't remember if we put the number at 222, 228, somewhere in that range. I thought he was going to hit below that number. I got the under. Scott has the over. So looking at it, you know, so far, not so good. He's hitting .143. It is early, but it's kind of, I'm a little bit worried. I'm sure. I'm feeling good about my bet because there's a lot of guys hitting .143. There's a lot of guys hitting .170. You know, batting average is down already. And, you know, if Jock's going to struggle at all, I don't know, but you know, he started out, it's Chicago. It's cold up there. It's going to warm up. They're going to have those games where, you know, the wind's blowing out there. I think, you know, Jock's definitely going to rebound. I hope he does. You know, I made this bet sort of against him in a way as a hedge because I drafted him a lot.
And in spring training, you were probably feeling pretty good too. He was killing it in spring training.
He was mashing. He looked like he was going to make the Dodgers sorry. So,
I hear you. It's still time though. I mean, the Cubs have played in a lot of crappy weather. They have some of the extreme slumpers out there. I don't know. I think there's plenty of time for it to turn out. He just has to stay out there long enough. I think that's the big key, is just staying healthy. But I think it's coming. A couple other questions before we wrap up here. Fantasy Football Ninja asks, when do you think Eloy will be back? Worth a stash in a redraft? Unless you have an IL spot, no. I think if you have an IL spot, sure, park him. But I wouldn't go out and try to find a pick him up. I don't see him coming back until August, maybe even September. So hard to tell with a long-term injury like this.
Yeah, I think we're probably 2 months away from having to make that decision. You know, maybe late June, people start, you know, thinking about it. I think you got time to kind of wait and maybe hear some news on it a little bit there. Maybe in a normal year, yeah, sure. You know, go for it. You know, like in a normal year, you know, go pick up Chris Sale right now. Right now, you need all those bench spots. There's so many injuries. There's so many players being platooned. A couple points that we've carried out already, you know, made these points already, but they're going to apply again here. There's a lot of reasons why you need every inch of that bench.
Yeah, you sure do. You play a lot of games in the NFBC platform, whether it's a DC. I know you're at least in one online, I think, and obviously TGFBI. And you just know the stashes kill you after a while. I mean, yes, everybody remembers Mike Trout, right? You know, okay, you stashed him. It worked out great. What about all those other guys that didn't get the call up right away? You know, it's tough. You know, I'm holding on to Wander in a DC, it makes sense a little bit, but you know, it's tough. You're holding on to those stashes. Meanwhile, you're losing all those at bats from guys that are hurt. It just adds up after a while.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, most of the leagues that we're kind of looking at these for, you know, the OC championships, TGFBI, those kinds of leagues and stuff like that, you know, you're looking at a pretty limited bench and you need that because, you know, not only for those injuries, I mean, the stuff that's just happening on a daily basis, it doesn't feel like in years past, you know, getting in there and adjusting rosters for the weekend series was quite a big deal. I mean, every single one of my rosters, I have to take out a hurt person for the weekend series every single week. You know, I would do that. You know, I always felt like in years past, it was going a little bit above and beyond where I'd get on there Thursday night and kind of roll through and look at matchups like, oh, okay, you're going up against the Nationals. You're going to see Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg or whatever. Like, okay, things aren't looking good for you. Who else is on my bench? You know, I felt like I was going above and beyond to do that. This year, you've got no other choice but to go through there because you're pulling out hurt guys.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's like it used to be like, okay, well, we can look at platoons. You know, we can, oh yeah, good ballpark. We'll choose that. We have choices. No, it's just like, I don't want to take a zero here. I don't want to take a zero. Then, you know, sometimes, and then of course a guy gets hurt on Friday night. It doesn't matter anyhow, but so it goes. Last question. Nate asks, Madrigal for Matt Chapman. I answered this on Twitter, but I want to hear your thought. AL only, two reserves, one of which he has Wander Franco stash. He has Fletcher, Nicky Lopez, and Laurie Garcia eligible for second base, so it feels like he can spare him. Would you trade Nick Madrigal for Matt Chapman?
You know, I didn't end up with a lot of Matt Chapman through draft just because I was a little bit worried about that offseason surgery there. But you know, he's looked okay. He's hit, you know, probably hitting a buck 80 like everybody else there. I looked at that question on Twitter, and my answer is a little bit less about. A little bit less about him, and it's more about, you know, Madrigal. Madrigal looks kind of the way that we thought he would. He's got no home runs. He's hitting 300, but he hits ninth in that lineup. It's not a lot of chance for him to move up there. If, you know, if he's going to hit an empty 300, you know, the big thing with him, and I think you're going to notice this as well, he's stolen one base so far. It's not like he's only been on base three times. Like, come on, one stolen base right. With all that speed. He's hit ninth and he's not running. He'll probably run a little bit at some point at least. But who was the other options? The guy had somebody else at second base who
– Yeah, he's got Fletcher. He's got Lurie Garcia. Yeah. He's got like three guys that are eligible at second. So it's not like he'd be short there. I mean, they're not – it's an AL only though too. So keep that in mind. It's like playing time's king. I get that. For me, it's a snap call. You know, the only thing it'd be is like, okay, I'm hurting on batting average and you don't want that because Chapman's going to hurt your batting average comparatively, but you're going to get so much more. And I'm looking at Chapman's game log too. And he, you know, he's starting to come around like in the last, I think he's got like a 900 OPS in the last 14 days, eight something in the last 21. So, you know, after an awful start dealing with that hip injury, seems fine now.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, David Fletcher's is going to be a guy. It's not, you know, you weren't playing Madrigal at third base anyway. So I don't know what the other option at third base is there, but it's not like Madrigal is going to hit 340 and you're going to want to replace, you know, David Fletcher with Madrigal because David Fletcher is probably going to be hitting 320 for you. Andy hits at the top of that lineup. He's got Mike Trout behind him. He's going to have the counting stats. He's going to score a lot of runs. He's even been running. I think he actually has a few stolen bases. So, you know, he's outrunning Madrigal. You're probably not going to replace, you know, Fletcher with Madrigal anyway. So I'm with you. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks for the question, Nick. Hey, before we sign off, Brock, what are you working on? Where can people find your stuff? What's the best way to get a hold of your advice?
Yeah, definitely. Follow me on Twitter there. I am working with FTN right now. I do a semi-weekly podcast with my buddies Matt and Matt over there for FTN. We mostly talk season-long stuff there. As I kind of alluded to earlier, work has been kind of a beast for me, and we haven't really been able to go forward with the plan. You know, with our initial plan, I plan to be a little bit on their DFS show with them in the mornings, talking DFS and stuff like that, and that hasn't quite worked out yet. I think things are calming down a little bit, and you're probably going to see a little bit more from me at FTN in the near future here. So we'll just kind of have to play it by ear there, but definitely hit me up on Twitter. As busy as I get, I always answer every single question that comes to me on Twitter. You know, whether you just, you know, write me there or send me an inbox, whatever. I'm always down to help. If you just want to, you know, chat baseball, I'm usually available to do that. I find a way. So definitely FTN. And if you're curious about the site, if you're interested in any of the DFS stuff that I was talking about earlier there, FTN has a great site for that, FTN Daily. There's projections on there. There's ownership projections, you know, something that I was kind of talking about, you know, looking at those ownership rates in single entry GPP, you want a good website that's going to be able to give you good ownership projections, something you could definitely find at ftndaily.com. So give us a look over there. If you have questions about it, you know, absolutely, you know, hit me up about that. I can teach you how to use the site. I can, you know, basically whatever you need, hit me up on Twitter. I'm there.
Very good. Hey, Brock, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for jumping on with us today. Good to get to actually talk to you after just like tweeting back and forth all this time.
Absolutely. Agree completely. Really enjoyed it here and look forward to listening to all the other RotoWire podcasts.
Awesome. And what next one coming up is our two start starters with Clay and Todd Zola tomorrow. So make sure to tune in for that. Thanks for listening today. Have a great day.
Try RotoWire today, free for 10 days. Get our premium tools, rankings, analysis, and breaking news alerts. No credit card required. Go to rotowire.com/try.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.